Welcome to the podfic of The Midnight Cafe, an Our Flag Means Death fanfiction written by Kara Wrights and art by Dean Bird, read by Little Fingies. This fic is rated mature. No archive warnings apply. Relationship: Blackbeard, Edward Teach, and Seed Bonnet. Summary: Novelist Ed Teach, author of The Art of Fuckery, doesn't expect to bump into a fan when he joins the host of regulars at the Midnight Cafe. Worse, Steed Bonnet doesn't seem to realize who he is. 8 chapters, 8 romance tropes, 1 swoon-worthy ride. The Revenge Times. Percolated perfection of love and joy. A sweet treat for your eyeballs. S.J. Publishing. It's fine, I guess, if you like two-person love triangles. Nigel Badminton, critic. Selected tags: Meet Cute, Slow Burn, Idiots in Love, Miscommunication, Angst with a Happy Ending, Deep Introspection upon the Nature of Writing. This story is a part of the Reverse Bang 2024 event and is a collaboration between Kara Wrights and Dean Bird. It contains several beautiful pieces of art by Dean Bird that are embedded within the fic. I will describe them as they appear in the story, but I recommend that you check them out on the archive as they are stunning. I am hoping to include some of them as cover images for the SoundCloud chapters, but I think you'll want to see them in their full resolution anyways. Chapter 1, Meet Cute. Chapter 1 begins with the first piece of art in this fic, which is the title card for the story. I will do my best to describe it here. It's a horizontal image with an indigo background. In full color, toward the bottom right, we see Ed and Steed dancing. Steed is dipping Ed, and Ed has a leg kicked forward for balance. They're looking at each other, and there are little pink hearts floating between them. It is really sweet. In the foreground to the left, much larger, is a cup of coffee with some latte art and some lavender vapor rising from it. The vapor is wrapping around the dancing figures, and it looks kind of magical. The background on the right is an image of an analog clock at midnight. The title of the fic, The Midnight Cafe, is written in a handwriting script in white above the coffee cup, and it's cute. There's a little crescent moon dotting the eye. In the bottom left, in a typewriter font, are the credits, written by Kara Wrights, art by Dean Bird. Fuck this. Fuck his life. It's all going tits up, and he has nothing to show for it. Not even a single fucking word in a single fucking document. Not even his research and planning spreadsheet. Okay, so maybe he used to have a research and planning spreadsheet full of half-cooked ideas and random tidbits of characterless dialogue and plot. Maybe he's even had a character sheet or two, full of convoluted backstories that would never see the light of day, and one too many tropey conveniences. But somehow, somewhere along the line, at approximately 10:55 p.m. on a Wednesday, Ed Teach has torched them all to the ground. Okay, that's maybe being a bit dramatic. He knows exactly where they are, buried in the bin function of his laptop, where he could run a recovery if he wanted to. But fuck it, he doesn't want to, because none of it is inspiring him. None of it sparks creativity and joy. It all feels like the same old, same old. Like the last 5 flowery, overwritten literary pieces of crap he's written. Or at least, that was the general consensus of his Goodreads reviews. And sure, yeah, they sold well. Continued to sell well, despite the heinous comments. Readers loved the deeply flawed characters and their complicated struggles. They liked the way he portrayed queer characters as people, full of grit and intrigue and complex humanity. But God, if he has to plot out another goddamn piece of trauma porn, he's going to lose his mind. They were all so fucking boring. Ed glances at his personal laptop, the one where he does all the non-writing things, and his budgeting spreadsheet laid out there in black and white and horrific fluoro yellow. Okay, yeah. The final payment for the Art of Fuckery is right there, highlighted, and its projected capacity to pay his rent, bills, and groceries is there, clear as day. He has about 6 months. 6 months to produce something worthy enough for his agent to negotiate the next book in his deal, get that advance rolling in. It doesn't have to be a book, per se, but it needs to be something. Words on a page would be fucking ideal, before he has to find a real job like his dad had always insisted before he kicked the bucket. Shit. Maybe he shouldn't have trashed the whole thing wholesale. What was he even going to try next, anyway? Take up a new hobby? Use one of those online prompt generators to get something kickstarted? It all sounds miserable. Ed picks up his house keys, tucking his phone into the back pocket of his jeans. Well, he's not going to get anything achieved sitting here. Might as well go do something. He's out the door and halfway down the block before he really registers how dark it is outside. Not even dark, it's proper nighttime. He checks the time. Oh, fuck. Yeah, it really is the middle of the night. Still, he's out here now, freezing his ass off in only a sweatshirt and jeans. Might as well commit to the walk, have a nice hot shower when he gets home, and hope the sudden changes in temperature spark some little part of his brain that he hasn't yet uncovered. The world is different in the dead of night. It's hushed, quiet, but every remaining sound feels so amplified it makes Ed jump. He'd written a book once, ages ago now, that took place entirely at night. It had been one of those writing challenges, to follow the characters only between sundown and sunrise. Things happened to them during the day, of course, but he hadn't allowed himself to show it on page. Oh, the things that had once entertained and fascinated him about writing. His knee aches in the cold, and he feels it with every step. But he keeps pushing, probably more than he should. The storefronts flash by in his peripheral vision. Dark clothes stores with only the mannequins lit. An old newsagent selling stuffed toys and craft supplies, probably on the verge of closing down. And there, at the end of the block, he sees it. It's like a shining fucking beacon, glowing through the cold night. The warm air inside makes the windows a little foggy, the lights skewing even more orange. Above the door swings a neon sign, lit up in warm tones. The Midnight Cafe. Well, shit. That's a new one. Ed is honestly not sure what he expected. A cafe? Open late enough even the bars are starting to kick out their patrons? Would it be dimly lit? A place for the seedier members of the community to go? Was it actually just a front or some kind of money laundering scheme? When he pushes his way through the front door, he finds himself in an open space, much like any regular cafe, filled with couches around low tables, and high tops with little solo seats, and even a whole breakfast bar. Though, is it really a breakfast bar if it's open at 10 p.m.? It's well lit, even if it's mostly with lamps and candles, and none of the glaring brightness of overhead LEDs. Yellow light, warm and comfortable, like it should be, thank you very much. And over there, against one wall, is an open fireplace, crackling merrily. It's not busy, per se, but it's not quiet either, which surprises Ed for this late in the night. The barista is humming away behind the coffee machine. There's a couple sharing a piece of cheesecake on one of the low tables, and a few other scattered customers, mostly solo attendees. Clearly, Ed's not the only one out late at night in this city, be they shift workers or insomniacs. He steps over to the display counter, eyeing up the different cakes and pastries. There's cronuts and donuts and carrot cakes smothered in cream cheese icing. There's fudgy slices of brownie and delicate sponge. Ed is just about to pick out a mocha cheesecake that's piled high with whipped cream and strawberries, unsure of how he's actually going to manage to eat the damn thing, when he finds himself pushed sideways, shoved, practically, by a figure entering through the doorway in a mad rush. "The usual for me, please, Jim." As if Ed was nothing more than a piece of furniture. Oh, the smug little fucker. The man is pushing into the Midnight Cafe like he owns the place, like the door is held open for him and all the staff are just waiting for his eventual appearance. Blonde hair, each curl perfectly in place, and his shirt all neatly pressed. In one hand, he holds a book, and Ed has never thought anyone could accurately be described as nose-buried before. Surely that's just an overdone cliche. But here he is, face so close, he's probably getting an ink stain on the tip. It's James Joyce, because, of course it is. "It's going on your tab," the barista calls back from the other side of the counter. "And Roach says you better pay up this time." "A cockroach runs the books at this place?" It's not making much sense to Ed, but his eyes are still on the man as he turns back toward the counter. He gives the staff a wave of acknowledgement and makes to move off towards a seat, but then he seems to spot Ed, the guy he'd so rudely body slammed on his way through the door. Something surprised flickers in his face, as if he only just suddenly realized the entire side of his body had made contact with a stranger, despite the knock still tingling down Ed's arm. "Oh, sorry," he says. And fuck, Ed's stuck. His eyes are glued to this fucking stranger, with his gorgeous curls and the crinkles by his eyes, and the way he smiles kind of nervously, as if he's unsure if he's about to be yelled at. Suddenly, from this angle, he doesn't seem so smug and uptight. The man ducks his head sheepishly, holds his book up with one hand like an explanation, and Ed tries to pretend it could actually count as one, and not just a feeble excuse. But then he's making a runner for it, over towards a set of low couches surrounding a coffee table. Ed wants to follow him, demand a proper apology, maybe even a promise to put his cake on the guy's tab. Ed wants to ask what the fuck is good about James Joyce anyway. Ed doesn't want to think about what else he wants to do. With the hindsight of his sweet face, the freckles that Ed had been able to see from up close, but that fade into his complexion from the distance of the tables, something different is stirring in Ed. He hasn't felt this way in years, hasn't appreciated the appearance of a guy like he suddenly wants to be doing. Had kind of forgotten that was even a thing he'd ever done, since he's gotten properly into writing and slowly cut off all his old drinking buddies and one-night stands for a life of stability. Never mind that the man's ass looks incredible, too, as he finds his seat. James Joyce guy is a fucking stunner, even if he has a sharp elbow. Ed has surely been looking for far too long. He needs to look away right now, before the guy catches him staring, but then... "And what do you want?" the barista asks, leaning over the counter. "Coffee? Cake? And maybe in another life, after having been bruised by a shitty customer like Joyce, he might have walked straight back out, back to his quiet little existence, where he could figure out some different way to shock his brain into coming up with a plot. But this is this life, and he's trying his hardest not to look over at a man like he's a schoolboy with a crush. The cheesecake, he decides. Eat in. It quickly becomes a bit of a habit. going to the Midnight Cafe, that is. Ed wouldn't have really considered himself an insomniac before, although the hints were definitely there. Long nights staring at the ceiling, thinking about plot points and characters, or even just his own existential dread. That was always a doozy. Drowsy afternoons where he could barely keep himself awake, but pushed through in the hope he'd actually finally sleep easy that night, only to do the whole thing all over again. Now he's practically nocturnal. He starts his day in the early afternoons and stays up till the ass crack of dawn before stumbling back into bed, too exhausted to think properly and actually managing to sleep for a decent stretch of time. He's started taking his laptop to the cafe, letting the staff bring him drink after drink, coffee, tea, malty hot chocolates, while he attempts to work on his book. Does he have a plot? That would be a no. Does he have a premise? Also no. He may not have written much of anything, but what he has done a lot of is people watch. The staff, the customers. There's Jim, one of the baristas, a bit gruff and no-nonsense. Their lattes are impeccable, though. There is something going on between them and one of the back-of-house staff, but they're also being aggressively flirted with by one of the regulars, and Ed is still trying to figure out how their whole thing is interconnected, but he hasn't quite cracked it yet. Then there's the Scandinavian guy, a Swede, Ed thinks, always loudly doing his English Duolingo classes, but otherwise talking to nobody. A guy who calls himself Frenchy always shoots him daggers, but it's so routine it almost feels comforting, which is weird. And then, of course, there's Ed's mystery man, Mr. James Joyce himself. It had been obvious from that very first night that he was a regular, very comfortable with the staff, and his favorite set of couches. He had his tab, too, and they just kept bringing him drinks. He didn't even need to go up and ask for them. Like money was no question. That first night had been Ulysses, obviously, but he'd pulled out all kinds of drama in the book department since then, and it had thrown a spanner in the works of Ed's opinion of the guy. First there'd been a pulpy crime thriller, then a risque romance with fucking Fabio on the cover. House of Leaves was next, of all things, where he'd spent the whole night spinning the book around in his hands to read the strangely formatted pages. Ed knew how much of a mindfuck that one was, and James Joyce had certainly spent a long time staring at the pages in confusion. And then tonight? Well, tonight he's reading The Art of Fuckery. It is, as the reviews say, a literary masterpiece. Bringing the queer experience to the bestseller shelves. Ugh, that one still makes Ed want to vomit. And a stunning quote from Philippa S. on Goodreads. Too much trauma porn for me. If I wanted to see sad gays, I'd go watch an art house film. It's Ed's fucking book. Worse still, it looks well-loved. The spine of the paperback is all creased, striped white where the print is wearing off the paper. The pages are yellowed, a few even carefully dog-eared, and it's full of sticky tabs, basically fit to bursting. Not only is Mr. James Joyce reading his book, he'd also taken the time to annotate it? In all the nights he'd been here, surreptitiously watching the man out of the corner of his eye while he lazily Googled and tried to call it research, Ed has never been more fascinated. What had been an interesting character, with all his square shoulders and golden freckles that had left Ed oddly magnetized, is now an absolute enigma. Fuck propriety. Fuck author-reader boundaries. He has to go talk to the guy. Ed abandons his belongings and picks his way through the tables, straightening up his leather jacket as he goes. No need to look shabby, especially if he's going to introduce himself, right? Probably doesn't even need an introduction. The guy's probably been giving him sideways glances while he hasn't been looking for days, wondering why the famous E. Teach was writing his next book there in his cafe. What are the fucking chances? But then, there he is, sitting right at his normal couch, and Ed is standing in front of him, or kinda over him, sorta, and he's holding his hand out to introduce himself. Hi. And there's nothing. Absolutely fucking nothing. No knowing smirk, no sideways look. No, the man just looks up and smiles a little, like he's surprised to see Ed standing there. Oh, hi! He takes the hand that's offered, shakes it. I've noticed you around the last little while. You must like the little place we have here. We, as if he's not a paying customer, but Ed has seen him close off his tab in the wee hours of the morning. He'd once thought briefly that he might have owned the place, but no, he seems to just genuinely love being here. I'm Steed. 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 Mr. James Joyce has a name, and it's Steed. Ed, Ed says, a little stupidly. He hadn't really thought this far ahead. He'd been convinced Steed would know exactly who he was. Maybe he could help him along a little, give him a little bit of a nudge in the right direction? What do you think of the book? Steed's gaze flicks between Ed and the paperback still curled in his hand. Another flash of surprise there. It's not a knowing surprise. Ed thinks he would be able to tell that with how carefully he's watching his face. More like he's surprised anyone would be interested enough in him to ask about what he's reading. Oh, he says, and Ed knows he's bang on the money when the man starts minimizing. Oldest trick in the book, that one. It's just a novel I enjoy, I guess. An old favorite. Don't be embarrassed, Ed says, surprising himself. Fucking love books. What do you like most about it? Don't fish for compliments, Edward. Don't be that narcissistic. He's got your book right fucking there. Well? Steed bites his lip, contemplating. Ed watches the drag of that lip between his teeth, feels the sensation of it thrumming in his gut, and hopes it's not too obvious that he's staring. I guess I really like the characters. Their complex humanity. The way Oliver strives for what he wants, even when the world keeps trying to knock him down. Oh, sweet, sweet Oliver. Ed had been proud of that characterization when he'd first come up with it. The queer kid, never able to truly hide himself, fighting all those uphill battles, nothing ever coming easy for him. Now it feels all a little one-dimensional. Surely some things in life aren't a total drag. And his romance with Lewis feels really grounded, Steed continues. They're always fighting for each other, even when they're maybe struggling to fully understand one another. Steed's got a wistful look in his eye now, and Ed gets the distinct impression the man has inserted himself into the story, that he sees the characters more as extensions of himself than their own independent beings. Ed can't deny he's been guilty of that in the past, too, and it's definitely a bit flattering, thinking his characters have enough life in them to really evoke that sensation. Some people say it's all a bit depressing, Ed tries, and it's not even an exaggeration, but Steed cuts him off before he can get much further. I can understand that, I guess. He leans forward a little, leaning in closer. But I think it's a very realistic struggle, and full of hope, I guess. He motions with the book in Ed's direction. I'm guessing you've read it? Read it? Yeah. Were you not overcome with affection for Lewis when he bared his heart to Oliver? That fucking hallway scene, with all the moving parts of their lives intersecting at once, pushing them to the edge of the moment, had driven Ed mad trying to write it. thought it was a bit too little too late, if I'm honest. Steed considers the thought and reaches for his coffee, taking a sip. He's really actually considering it, properly considering it. The man could host a fucking book club for the art of fuckery, and here he is, entirely unaware of who he's speaking to. I think, Ed, he says finally, and Ed tries not to think too hard about the way the man says his name, all warm and soft in his mouth, that if I was to judge Lewis for his personal failures, I'd have to restart therapy all over again. Oh, fuck. He's opened up a can of worms. He's ready to get the fuck out of there, make an awkward apology for overstepping, but he finds he can't quite look away. He knows Lewis from back to front, wrote the playbook and all that, and Steed wouldn't have struck him as particularly similar to the man who took 2 decades of serial monogamy to realize he was gay. So he asks the question that's going to plague him forever if he leaves it alone. What's that mean? It's uncanny, but something shifts in the man in front of him. All Steed's lingering tension seems to go out the window at the opportunity to tell a good story, like he can spin the tale out into the most fantastic yarn, and he motions Ed dramatically into the seat opposite him. "Well, where to start?" he begins, but leaves no space for Ed to actually answer. It's a performance, laid out for Ed's consumption, as if reciting in this way could hide all the insecurities buried underneath. I was married for 10 years, an absolutely abysmal 10 years, if I do say so myself. Not sure quite how we ended up there, but Mary and I made our vows and both tried rather hard to stick to them. Ed had been thinking, from Steed's connection to the art of fuckery, and especially to Lewis, that there was something like this going on, but even so, he finds himself riveted, letting the story wash over him. 2 whole kids, with much difficulty and IVF, but Mary was very adamant on being a mother, and I was never going to deny her that. Even named one of them Lewis, but I didn't get my choice on the spelling. There's parts of the story Ed is desperate to know more about, but interrupting feels particularly rude. So he lets Steed go on with his summary of the tale and keeps his tongue carefully held between his teeth. And then, of course, the dramatic split, by which I mean Mary found a man who was actually interested in her, and I took the coward's way out and found a unit to rent. He looks a little forlorn at the admission, breaking through his actor's facade, but then he's pressing ahead, like the words are pouring out an open floodgate. That's, of course, when my therapist got involved, and we did a lot of work on what it meant to be closeted, what it would take to help me come into my own, you know. Oh, Ed did know. He'd thought he'd been able to clock Steed's queerness. Not that all his readers were gay, but there was definitely something about him that Ed had picked up on. To have it confirmed is the icing on the cake, making his stupid little problem with being unable to stop tracking Steed across the room feel less stupid and more full of intrigue. "Still haven't found my Oliver, though," he says. There's a look on his face, something a little too dazed, a little too yearning, but he quickly smothers it up. "Enough about my life. What about you? Are you more of an Oliver or a Lewis? Or a Chris, even?" Ed thinks for a moment about his characters, the arcs he explored throughout fuckery. Of course, he'd related a bit to every character. That was part of the trick of writing, wasn't it? But were there any of them modeled after his own life? He'd definitely come out young, blown his whole life to pieces a bit, and then had to put it all back together through the wreckage that was his first real relationship. That was very Oliver of him. But he'd also spent the next 15 years after that pretending he didn't have a heart, which was very Lewis, too. Even Chris, with his tendency to fall hard and fast and then cry about it later, certainly felt familiar. His palms were already a little sweaty just at this conversation, that little thrum in his mind, knowing he'd have to work incredibly hard not to let himself get swept up in the idea of Steed, a gay man who he found very attractive, sitting opposite him and talking about his fucking book and looking at him like he was fucking worth talking to. You know, he says finally, I'm not sure. Well, tell me something about yourself then. I can try and fit you like a BuzzFeed quiz. What do you do for work? Well, that was the fucking kicker, wasn't it? He couldn't lie, not now after Steed had bared his soul so openly. I'm a writer. Gosh, Steed says wistfully. I wish I could be a writer. It seems like so much fun, but alas, I'm much better on this side of the publication. He taps Ed's book, sitting right there in front of him, with so much affection it makes Ed want to squirm. What kind of things do you write? That's a tough fucking question, too. Steed is just bowling him over with all the doozies. Ed thinks about pretentious literary fiction, about queer pain, about complex, messy love stories. He thinks about the book under Steed's palm, full of journalistic praise and scathing critique. He thinks about all the half-abandoned ideas sitting in the trash folder. And then he looks up into Steed's face, all shining glow and hope. He's fucking radiating it, like talking with Ed is the highlight of his whole night. Ed thinks it would be incredibly easy to fall for this man. That if he gave himself permission, he'd be a goner. When he speaks, finally, the words fall out of him in a rush. I think my next book is going to be a romance, he says. Well, fuck. End of chapter. The Midnight Cafe, Chapter 2, Friends to Lovers. A narrator's note. I'm using a different setup for recording this chapter, so if you notice a difference, please let me know what you think. And with that, let's begin. Okay, so maybe the romance thing wasn't actually that insane of an idea. It had sure felt that way at first, after Ed had finished up his conversation with Steed, settled down at his laptop to write, and realized he wasn't sure where to even start. But he'd read romances before. He understood the basic structure of the genre. Longing, yearning, desire, things going wrong, chuck in a bit of miscommunication and Bob's your uncle. So he'd looked up character sheets and trope encyclopedias. He'd frantically downloaded half a dozen romances in different subgenres, both queer and, perhaps against his better judgment, straight. He'd needed to quickly get the lay of the land, properly figure out how this whole thing was going to work. And so he dove in. And miraculously, things started to flow. The books he was reading were so effortlessly consumable. The characters and complications were sometimes straightforward, but always delicious. He kept a running document of ideas, archetypes and things he could play with, merge with his existing style, make fresh and new and exciting. Switching genre partway through a multi-book deal? Probably a nightmare proposition, and his agent was going to hate him. But hey, a book was a book, right? Certainly better than no book. And still, he keeps finding himself back at the Midnight Cafe. Ed thinks he'd probably be classified as properly nocturnal by now. He wakes up well past noon, eats something small at home, usually toast, if there's bread in the freezer, and works on his book until the sun dips below the horizon. At which point he heads out for the cafe to get a sweet treat, some high-quality coffee, and a solid look at Steed. Sometimes they even manage to hold a conversation. Ed tries not to make them too long, far too aware he's lingering at Steed's table like a man obsessed. Sometimes they talk about what Steed is reading. Sometimes Ed throws character ideas at him to see what resonates most. It's fun, getting to soundboard off of a real live, living, breathing human for the first time since he was attending writing classes in his late teens. It makes planning and plotting fun for the first time in ages, maybe ever. And so he keeps coming back like Steed is some kind of drug. Sometimes they don't talk at all, just exist close to each other. The first few times it had felt uncomfortable, in a weird kind of way. Not the existing bit, that felt as easy as breathing, but maybe that was half the problem. It felt too easy, like he could exist next to Steed for the rest of his life. But hey, try not to come on too strong, all right, mate? No use courting disaster. So instead, he finds himself aware of every shift of Steed's body, every intake of breath as he reads a particularly interesting section. Ed copies and pastes reference pictures from Pinterest into his mood board on his phone, in lieu of the laptop he hadn't managed to unpack, and sips his coffee, trying to resist the urge to look sideways. He can do this. He can keep his focus on his work and not spend the whole evening staring at his new friend. He can do hard things. He's managed it before, and they'd been perfectly, pleasantly, lovely days. Except, Steed is reading The Art of Fuckery again. It must really be one of his favorites, and blushing furiously as he turns the pages. What's in the book he could possibly be that embarrassed about? We have a piece of art. It's full of warm tones. Ed and Steed sit facing the viewer head on, each at their own table at the cafe. At stage left, Steed is sitting up straight, one leg crossed over the other and reading a book. If you look carefully, you can see it's The Art of Fuckery, and it has lots of tabs sticking out the sides. Steed is wearing a cherry red suit with a gold waistcoat and a white shirt. He's got a dark red tie and pocket square, and he's wearing brown leather shoes and patterned socks. At stage right, Ed sits at his own table. He's wearing glasses, he has a short beard, and his hair is pulled back in a low, messy bun. He's resting his chin in his hand, looking at Steed, and where a thought bubble would be, there are some little hearts. And if you look closely, you can see he has actual hearts in his eyes. He's wearing a simple white sweater and black pants, and his other hand rests on a light blue mug. His drink is topped with a lot of whipped cream. Behind them, you can see the rest of the cafe, but it's all shadowed to place the focus on our guys. It looks like it's raining outside. The space is illuminated by several pendant lights casting a warm glow, and honestly, it looks cozy as fuck. This piece of art is set as the cover image on SoundCloud, but you'll probably want to go back to the archive to take a look yourself because it's gorgeous. You'll find a link in behind this track. Ed glances at his progress through the pages and mentally scans the storyline in his head to make his best guess of what part he's up to. Not the big confrontation at the laundromat. Not the candlelit dinner after the power goes out. He should be well past those by now, and he can even see where Steed has marked them with dozens of tabs, like he imagines most of his fans have. No, Steed is later than that, right around the overwrought erotic chess scene? Really? Haven't you read this before, mate? He asks, unable to help himself. Maybe Steed is just a little turned on. Ed knows his sex scenes tend to be pretty heavy-handed. Except, that blush on Steed's cheeks is just this side of too pink. His mouth open a little, like he's surprised. Like he's fucking titillated. A stunned maiden, shocked by what he's reading. You must have read the steamy bits. And the poor fucking man blushes even harder, closing the book and resting it on the table in front of him. He stammers. Oh, he's so fucking embarrassed. I feel like I'm reading it with new eyes. What the hell does that mean? Something swoops low and hot in Ed's gut, but he tries not to think too hard about it. Steed keeps staring directly ahead, steadfastly avoiding Ed's gaze, and even that speaks multitudes. Multitudes about what, exactly? Ed isn't sure, but it's definitely not normal Steed behavior. He could push. He could ask again. Ask him why his cheeks and neck are radiating heat. Why he slammed the book down like it was electric after however many times of reading it before. Why this time? But could Ed handle knowing the answer? Would it be worse if Steed was thinking about Ed while reading, or if he was thinking about someone else? Instead, burying all his questions deep down, he turns back to his phone and sips his coffee. He thinks he feels Steed glancing at him, like he's trying not to be caught. Ed tries not to think his own thoughts too loudly. He knows exactly what happens in that scene, had spent far too long working through it that the characters had lost their physical existence and morphed into weird blobs of themselves. It had started sexy and become far too robotic and clinical through the various rewrites. But now, suddenly, Lewis has Steed's face and Steed's ass, and Ed can imagine his hands where they rest, just there against the book in the corner of his peripheral vision, holding his, no, Oliver's, hips. Fucking titillated indeed. It's almost midnight. Nope, Ed certainly hasn't been timing his arrival to the cafe carefully for optimal whimsy in the hope that Steed would find it charming after a recent conversation about favorite rom-coms and serendipity and fate. That would be a mad thing to do. But it's cold, and he's got his leather jacket buttoned up tight. He'd popped the detachable hood on and everything. Like, that would help much, but it has made the walk over a little less ass-biting. Now he's here, and inside looks all warm and toasty, just like the first night. He's still not sick of it. The glow of the warm lights through the window, the fog of the heating against the glass. In fact, it's kind of the opposite. He keeps getting more and more comfortable, like it's a bit like home. Once more unto the breach, or whatever the fuck that quote is. When Ed steps through the door, Steed is standing by the counter, talking with the owner. Yeah, that's Roach. He'd figured that one out in his first week after some well-timed eavesdropping. When the door jingles, he turns his head and, okay, Ed could eat that smile for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Ed! Hey, mate. I was just telling Roach here about how amazing E-Teach and the Art of Fuckery is. Laying it on a bit thick there, if Ed does say so himself, but he's not going to complain. How's your reread going? Finished and restarted, actually. Steed ducks his head nervously, like he's scared to admit it. Can't seem to stop myself. It's become a bit of a pastime. Hey, I get it, Ed says. Personally, he'd been forced to read the thing one too many times through the editing process, and there's no way anyone could convince him to read it again, but Steed's enthusiasm sure is a close thing. It's a great book. If you ignore the fact there's no happy ending, everyone ends up sad and miserable, and also that massive gaping plot hole in chapter 3. Roach pops a plate with a slice of orange cake up on the counter for Steed and shakes his head. But if it's that good, wouldn't the author be too fancy for a place like this? We're just a coffee shop. Too fancy for... The author was too stunned to speak. Ed loves this place. This place is... Too fancy? Roach, what are you talking about? This place is plenty fancy. I'm sure someone like E. Teach would be delighted, Steed says, like he plucked the idea straight out of the top of Ed's head. Delighted. Ed echoes dumbly, but Steed must take it as confirmation of his thought, because he turns back to Roach with a grin. Exactly! I still don't think we're the right kind of place for a book event, Steed. We don't really have a function space. Where do you think we'd set it all up? Plus, advertising? The books? I can handle all that, of course. Totally up my alley. Steed leans a little closer, all eager-eyed enthusiasm. Let me be your events manager. Pro bono, of course. And that's when Ed realizes what this conversation is actually about. Took him fucking long enough, but to be fair, he hadn't been prepared to be hit with his own pseudonym 3 seconds after walking through the door. Steed wants to organize a book signing. With E. Teach. With Ed. Shit. Still not sure about it, Steed, Roach is saying, and Steed is taking his cake, but he's looking all forlorn now, like his dreams have been fucking dashed. Try the 40 orange glaze and tell me what you think. I'll make you a mood board, he tries. Then you'll see the vision. But Roach is already busying himself with polishing cutlery and pretending Steed isn't there. Come on, mate, let's find a table, Ed finds himself suggesting. You can tell me all about this idea you've got. It sounds fucking fascinating. Bit of an understatement there. Ed needs to know every single element of Steed's plans and exactly how he's going to factor into it before he loses his mind. But Steed is going with it, letting himself be led over towards one of the couch and low table setups that have become one of their favorites. He doesn't even seem to notice Ed hasn't ordered anything. Thank you, Ed, he says softly as he settles in, sitting the plate down so it's exactly halfway between himself and where Ed sits down opposite. Ed can't pretend he doesn't notice that one, or the way it makes his tummy do a stupid little swoop. And then Steed takes a bite, considers it in his mouth, and frowns slightly. 40 orange glaze, he said? Yep. Well, Steed puts the spoon back down, carefully to the side of the plate, so it's also halfway between himself and Ed. Is that an invitation, or... Tell me about the idea, Ed says, so he doesn't have to think too much about whether he's allowed to pick up that spoon, to take his own bite of the orange cake from that same piece of cutlery that had touched Steed's lips. Well, obviously, you know, book signings, events. I'm sure you've done a few of those in your time. Understatement. Yep. I've just... Steed says, considering how to continue. Well, I guess I've just been absolutely enamored with The Art of Fuckery after rereading it far too many times the past couple of weeks. Ever since we got talking about it, really, and I guess I thought it would be just a great idea to... He glances around the space of the cafe, as if he's imagining rearranging all the furniture in his mind. Ed follows his gaze, tries to imagine whatever Steed is seeing there. Imagine if we just pack down the high tops, rearrange all the couches into a kind of viewing space. Then you could pop him up there, on one of the taller tables, or maybe even the wingback armchair from the corner. A swoop of his hand, a grand gesture. And then he could do a reading, maybe talk a little about his inspiration, or answer questions from the crowd. Ed can see it. He really can. The whole layout. But he can't quite see himself up there. E. Teach seems more like a shadowy figure than a real flesh-and-blood person, with Ed's salt-and-pepper beard and hair desperately in need of a trim. Do you really think Teach has a big enough audience to fill a space like this? He asks. It's a bit niche, isn't it? Niche? Steed looks at him dumbfounded. Ed, The Art of Fuckery was a New York Times bestseller. Oh, he'd kind of forgotten about that bit. A bit of a hollow accomplishment, anyway. Fucking anything can be a New York Times bestseller these days. Yeah, but... And maybe we could make it into a whole series. We could find other queer authors to take the spotlight every month or so. Maybe we could find the next E-Teach. Maybe you could even share some of your work when you're ready. Wouldn't that just be fucking swell? He thinks about telling him, just blurting it out right then and there. I'm E-Teach. That's my book. But it curdles like sour milk in his gut. What would Steed think of him? Fucking lying to his face the past few weeks like that. He's in too deep now. He can't get out that easily. Instead, he gives into the urge that's still been simmering in the back of his consciousness, reaching for the spoon. He shovels a too large mouthful of cake into his mouth and tries to smile agreeably around the mouthful. Not a denial, but not a yes either. Great work, Teach. What do you think of the cake, Ed? A voice asks, as if the universe can sense Ed's desperate need to have the focus off him, or rather, the other him, for half a bloody second. It's Roach, bringing over a soy latte complete with octopus-like latte art. Hmm, Ed says noiselessly. Going great, words. He's known for them. Personally, I thought it barely tasted of oranges, Steed says, with all the haughtiness of a man a bit fed up that he hasn't been taken seriously. And when Ed flicks his gaze towards Roach, he can see the man's expression sour in real time. He sits the coffee down, slowly, and then he stands back up to his full straightness. I see. Shit, Ed's never seen Steed that cutting before, and it's fucking terrifying. But even more so is that expression on Roach's face, like he's ready to splash hot milk all over Steed's rather nice dress shirt. He's walking away quickly, though, not deigning to offer Steed a response, which is probably a good thing, all things considered. Mate, Ed cries, what were you thinking? I was giving an honest review of the cake. To the dude you're trying to convince to let you plan a function in his damn cafe? Maybe don't antagonize the man. Antagonize? Steed looks bewildered. Was I really? Oh, you so were. But then again, there's something kind of sweet and innocent now in the way Steed looks between Ed and the cake and Roach's retreating back. It comes on so quickly, but Ed can tell it's genuine, like he hadn't really thought that deeply about his words when he'd said them. He lets out a little huff of breath, thinking it through. Oh, I guess I should apologize. He goes to stand, but Ed reaches for his arm, pushes him back towards his seat. Maybe later, once he's gotten over it a bit himself, Ed suggests. Don't think he's going to magically think you have a different opinion on his cake just because you said sorry. With a sigh, Steed settles back into the couch properly. I guess you're right, Ed. That was a very astute observation. I'm a people watcher. What can I say? Steed takes a moment, staring out over the expanse of the cafe. His thoughts are deep, complicated, and Ed can't tell whether he's thinking about social norms and pleasantries, or about authors and book events, or some other secret third thing. Ed wants desperately to be inside his head, to figure out every enigma of his thoughts, even as his mouth turns down at the corners and he finally turns to Ed to speak. How would you do it? Do what? Ed asks. Get the event up off the ground. How can I convince Roach? How do I even get in contact with Teach? What if he thinks it's a terrible idea and the whole thing crumbles? Ed couldn't think it was a terrible idea if he tried, even if he is imagining it's someone else up there, some other E. Teach, author of The Art of Fuckery, someone who would know exactly how to charm Steed, how to talk eloquently about love and art and queer fiction, and have absolute faith in the stories he's writing and sharing. Ed finds the words leaving his mouth before he has a proper chance to consider them. What if I ask my agent? What? Steed's eyebrows fly up, his mouth hanging open. Yeah, what? That's a terrible fucking idea. What the fuck was he thinking? But his bastardly mouth won't shut up. I can ask my agent, see if she has a connection. She might be able to get some balls rolling, and you could use that for leverage with Roach. Oh, Ed, really? Steed's smiling now, a broad fucking grin that takes up his whole face. He's fucking delighted, and Ed tries not to think too hard about how that makes him feel, even as he's buried at the bottom of this giant hole he's dug for himself. Steed reaches for his wrist, grips it in his strong fingers, and shakes him enthusiastically, like he hardly realizes he's touching Ed. I mean, I'd have to make a formal introduction anyway, but a good word and a personal email address would do wonders, surely. Yeah, of course, mate, Ed says weakly, but he's done for now. And so he takes Steed's offered phone in his hands, putting in his own number and sending himself a text so he'll have Steed's too. The plan is set. And fuck! What has he gotten himself into? Back in the safety of his apartment, with dawn cracking over the horizon, Ed stares at the number stored in his phone. Steed Bonnet. He even has a last name now, after all these weeks, just sitting there neatly in his contacts. He's got Steed's fucking number, and he didn't even have to make some awkward flirty ploy for it. This could be the best thing that's ever happened to him. Or a fucking disaster. He thinks about adding a little love heart or something equally ridiculous, because it would be fun and nice, and it would make him smile every time he looks at it. But then he imagines Steed seeing it over his shoulder in some passing moment, and that feels too horrifying to commit to. Cold, clinical, Steed Bonnet it is. Except when he looks at it, it conjures up the image of the man, and Steed Bonnet couldn't be cold or clinical if he tried. Steed is all warmth, all the time, in a way Ed has never really known before, even when he's panicking about saying the wrong thing or not being good enough. Steed is always good enough. The phone buzzes in his hand, shocking him from his own thoughts. Good night, Edward. The sun's pushing its way around the edges of his curtains, desperate to be seen. It's anything but night. I mean, good morning, I guess. That's more like it. Ed grins down at his phone, tips his head back like girls do in rom-coms. He feels a little giddy, a little exasperated. This might all go to shit, and everything had spiraled so fast, he still doesn't quite know how it happened. But he's here now, with Steed's numbers in his phone, just a text or a phone call away, and things might all go south so fast, but at least he has this. He showers, tries not to think about Steed too hard as he soaps his body, has an unfortunate quick little moment about him that he won't speak of again. Blonde curls, mouth around a spoon, mouth around other things, and then climbs into bed, still fucking giddy. He stares at the messages page of his phone and tries not to think about what to reply. Steed's right. It's not night, but it doesn't feel right to say good morning as he's climbing into bed and falling asleep. What he settles on is incredibly stupid, but he's laughing to himself even as he types it and buries his phone under his pillow. Good morning, Steed. X. End of chapter 2. The Midnight Cafe, Chapter 3, Mistaken Identity. We start with a text conversation between Ed and Steed. Ed, I'm so sorry about last night. No hard feelings, mate. These things happen. Some hard feelings. I had a little sob on Jim's knee. I stood you up. An absolute dick of a move. Wait, did you really? Of course not. I'm just messing with you. Oh, thank God. Is it any better if I say it was a family emergency? Depends if there really was a family emergency, or if this is a my dog ate my homework kind of situation. Real emergency, actually. My ex-wife spent the night in hospital. Her fiancé broke his arm falling off a ladder. He paints murals. Murals? Fucking sick. Quite. But alas, broken arm, Mary in the hospital, parental duties thrust upon me. You had the kids? Set up on the fold-out couch in my living room and everything. Pizza party on a school night. Does that make me a bad dad? Don't think you could be a bad dad if you tried, mate. Almost considered ditching them once they fell asleep for coffee and cake, but that's probably abandonment and neglect. Probably. I was sorely tempted, though. He's not... Surely Steed's not flirting. Ed pulls on his jacket, stuffs his writing laptop and his brain dump notebook into his bag, and then checks his phone again. Like he's a fucking teenager, waiting desperately for another message from his schoolyard crush. Are you coming out tonight? He types instead, unwilling to leave Steed hanging for too long. Already en route. Our normal table. He's grinning. He knows it. He can't seem to help himself. Race you to it. Ed beats Steed to the door by seconds, bumping into him with his shoulder as they both reach for the door handle. Hey, you, he says. Steed only jumps a little bit, face softening as he turns to greet Ed. You beat me, he says, but there's no trace of defeat there. Ed looks for it, he really does, but no, nothing. His eyes duck to Steed's mouth, like he might see it in a downturned corner of his lip. But there's just soft eyes and freckles and that open smile, like he's happy to see him. Ed sucks in a breath, but he knows he's let the moment drag on for far too long. Let's call it a tie, he manages to say, and Steed's properly grinning then, holding out his hand for Ed to shake. A tie. They order their coffees and find their seats, and it all feels too easy. Knocking his knees underneath the table, sharing stupid banter back and forth. Ed's never known someone that has felt this easy to be around. Tell me about the book, Steed says, before Ed's even got his computer properly out. I want to know everything. He fucking means that. Ed can tell. It's there in the crinkles of his eyes, all earnest and eager. He sips at his mug of hot tea and waits. And Ed realizes he'd probably tell the guy anything if he asked nicely. About the book, about his past, about himself. Dangerous territory, that. Only if you don't mind sharing, of course. You have your intellectual property to protect, I'm sure, but I... Steed backpedals. No, it's... How does Ed tell Steed that this book has taken up as much of his mind over the past few weeks as the man himself has? How does Ed tell Steed that he's never done anything like this before in his life, but he's also having the best time ever? How does Ed tell Steed about all the ways in which he's accidentally become a formative component of Ed's career, maybe even the pivotal turning point? I guess I've really been inspired by this place, he says. Fucking cop out. A meet-cute in a cafe. Still working out the layers. Coffee shop is a classic. Steed hums and takes another sip of his tea. I can see the vision. Very romantic. Obviously there is going to be tension, things going wrong. There's a quirk in the corner of his mouth as he looks across the table at Ed. Miscommunication? Probably. A dreaded trope, if ever there was one, he says, and there's a little note of drama to his voice, but Ed can't tell if he's putting it on to hide an honest opinion or if he's just ribbing him. It gets a bit of a bad rap, of course, the old miscommunication. He'd taken classes where they'd dedicated whole seminars to discussing the ways in which miscommunication can make or break a plot, and, by extension, the reader's enjoyment of a novel. Then again, it's also true. Real. People hold things back all the fucking time. It's vulnerable to know and be known. Sure, Ed's holding back things with Steed even now, and he's aware of them like a toothache. But he hasn't lied. And then again, there's plenty Steed hasn't asked him about either. He hasn't fucked anything up. He just hasn't shared. Yet. Theoretically. Ed watches as Steed draws a line in the condensation on the table, swirling it out into a shape Ed can't quite catch proper sight of before wiping it all dry with the sleeve of his sweater. Wait, was it his turn in the dialogue? He takes a big gulp of his own coffee as if it will set his mind at ease, but all it does is burn his tongue. Sometimes it's necessary to propel the third act conflict forward, he says through gritted teeth. I've heard people say it's unrealistic. Steed watches his hands, twisting the mug backwards and forwards thoughtfully. That in real life, people know how to ask each other things. Plenty of things you haven't asked me, mate. Plenty of incredibly important things. Sure, Ed scoffs. But, Steed, people hide things from each other all the time. Half-truths, untruths. Lies of omission. I guess. Another sip of tea, and then he's looking up and catching Ed's eye properly, burning into him in a way that makes Ed's belly squirm. Maybe the unrealistic part is when it all kind of works out in the end. Oh no, fuck that. He can't be saying things like that. Ed's really gonna have a panic attack at this silly low table in this silly cafe if he follows Steed down that path. So instead, he pulls his laptop out of its bag and decisively props it open on the table. Well, I guess I'll just have to prove the naysayers wrong and write a miscommunication that's heartfelt and realistic and has a happy ending. There's a little quirk to Steed's mouth again, almost a smile. Ed returns it in kind. Yeah, a fucking killer happy ending. Help me name my characters, please. Tell me about them. Character A, a little uptight, needing to learn to let loose. Works at the cafe, probably a barista or something, still working that out. Character B, rough and tumble, needs direction and stability. Graphic designer-ish type, but maybe doing badly? Maybe he's lost his job because he's not meeting deadlines. Is that too bleak? For a romance? Shit, is it? Guess it depends on the tone you take. Bleak can be funny. Right. Bleak can definitely be funny. Dark comedies are a whole TV genre. True. Anyway, names. Names. The bane of my existence. There always seems to be an ex or a friend of a friend with every name I can come up with, and then all I can think of is them rather than the character, and it all turns out kind of shit. How about David? Do you know a David? Phew, no. We have a winner. And? Alex. Alexander, spoken in a whisper. Damn, you can't just get all sultry on me like that. A good choice? Fantastic choice, Steed. Roach hasn't approached them again with Sweet since that day the week before with the 40 orange glaze cake, but Steed has been buzzing for an opportunity to bring up his book event plans again. Ed can tell. He's trying to catch Roach's eye across the floor of the cafe, eyebrows dancing dramatically, and when the owner slips out from behind the counter, he gestures to him with a wave. Still, it's long minutes before Roach arrives at their table, Lucius following along behind with a tray of petit fours. Lucius is a strange one. Ed is still trying to get a read on him. He thinks he has most of the other staff nailed down, both their personalities and their roles within the team of the cafe. And maybe it's because he's been distracted by Steed. Or maybe it's because Lucius never seems to actually do much of anything. But Ed still hasn't been able to figure out his deal. He's dating Pete. One of the chefs makes him mean Eggs Benedict, and he splits his time pretty evenly between the kitchen and front of house. But the guy doesn't seem to have any set role, and he's much more prone to loitering. Ed appreciates a good loiter from time to time, but he can't imagine Roach would keep him on the books for his gossiping alone. So maybe he's also savvy with the taxes or something, or is secretly blowing everyone under the table. But right, the petit fours and the current conversation. fucking critical, really, because Steed's got his Pinterest board out on his phone, and he's already trying to talk Roach through all the ideas he has for themed drinks with latte art and homemade syrups. Roach's eyebrows are steadily rising, but Ed's keeping a solid eye on Lucius, who seems to be resisting the urge to bust out laughing. And see, I've already contacted Teach's agent, and I think we might be able to get something worked out with the book stock. They can order us, or I guess I mean me, a few boxes to sign and sell. I'm sure I can figure out what to do with the leftovers, if there are any, but of course, they'd be no risk to your bottom line because I'd be the one paying for them. Ed thinks about his piles of author copies, stacked up in the spare room where he doesn't have to look at them, begging for a use. He could just offer them up to Seed, save everyone the trouble. If only... You really think you can get this guy on board? Roach asks. A big-name author coming along to my cafe? It's a unique establishment. Well, Steed's right about that. I'm sure he'd love it. Maybe, finally, Steed's breaking the guy down. Ed can see the little slump of resignation in Roach's shoulders, the little glimmer of amusement in his eyes. Lucius is taking everything in with a delighted little smirk, but Steed seems entirely unaware of it all. Ed's just pleased Steed's finally getting what he wants, even if that means he's got to figure out his own shit. Figure out how he's going to tell Steed about the whole him of it all. That's future Ed's problem. Please, Steed tries again. I promise I have it all in hand. He reaches for one of the little cakes and pops it into his mouth. Ed picks up his own dessert, a delicate little sponge cake with strawberry jam that's not too sweet, just right. Across the table, Steed's nose wrinkles. It's quick, only the slightest of motions before it's smoothed away and he's smiling toward Roach. Oh, he says lightly, this is fantastic. You like it? Roach seems genuinely shocked, but... Then again, Steed does seem like a tough customer to please. A beat, and then he continues. It's an absolutely interesting flavor. Not strictly a compliment there, Steed, but he's managing to keep his face all smooth and level, and if Ed hadn't seen that glimmer of a moment when his mouth was puckered like a sour lemon, he probably wouldn't have been able to catch him in the lie. Then again, maybe he's just learning how to read Steed and all the small minutiae of him. Roach, predictably, is all pleased. Thanks, Steed. He grabs the now empty plate with both hands and turns back towards the kitchen, calling over his shoulder, If you can get Teach on board and you pay a deposit for the catering, I guess I'm down. Ed flicks his gaze towards his friend. He'd thought before, loads of times, actually, that Steed had something sunny and radiant about him. Maybe it was his golden curls. Maybe it was the way his whole face seemed to crinkle when he smiled. Somehow, all the elements of him together made him fucking glow. And right now, with his mouth a little open in shock, he couldn't possibly be shining brighter. Really? He asks quietly. But Roach is too far away to hear now. And all he gets in response is a quiet snicker from Lucius as he follows his boss back behind the counter. Steed comes back to himself slowly, staring at his hands as if they belong to someone else. He really said yes. And Ed knows the words aren't for him. He really said yes. Great work with the poker face, mate. Ed laughs and Steed looks up properly then, catching his gaze. Oh, God. Ed, if you ever see me eating mint and peanut butter together again, know that my body has been taken over by aliens. The laughter bubbles out of Ed's mouth, loud and uncontrollable. And then Steed is joining in, covering his mouth with his hand to smother the giggles that try their fucking hardest to burst out of him. He's gorgeous when he's grinning like that. Fucking radiant. Ed's laughter slowly dies away. Caught somewhere in the connection between his eyes and Steed's. They're just looking at each other now, quiet and gentle, but no less commanding for it. Ed is stuck there in the current of Steed's gaze. Congrats on your success with the book event, he says finally. And he should look away, but he can't. He can't do anything of the sort. Steed's mouth quirks in a self-satisfied little smile. Yes, I did quite well with that one, didn't I? Really got him to come around. I guess it all comes down to the merit of the idea. His hand rests in the center of the table between them, fingers curled against the warm chestnut of the wood, and Ed catches the shape of it out of the corner of his eye. He imagines reaching out across the gap between them, covering Steed's fingers with his own. You'll buy a ticket, won't you? Huh? Oh, fuck. He's still talking about the book event. And here Ed was, spinning out some hand-holding fantasy. You'll buy a ticket to see Teach? Ed's mind is as blank as printer paper, a tinny hum ringing in his ears. Yeah, of course, mate. Oh, well, good. And Steed's smiling again, wider now, as if incredibly pleased at the idea. The idea of Ed buying a ticket to his own fucking book event, just rocking up like another member of the crowd while he's meant to be up there, doing a reading and entertaining the masses, and he has to tell him. Ed looks at his own fingers, as if the ragged hangnails can give him the words to tell Steed everything. But then Steed's tapping Ed's ankle lightly with his foot and jolting him out of the moment. So, he asks lightly, smile bright. Have you decided what Alex is doing for work yet? Some kind of night in your darkness. Ed wakes up to warm afternoon sunlight streaming through the open curtains of his window. Fuck, he really should have closed those. He'd been having the most amazing dream, but he can feel it slipping through the fingers of his memory now. Steed had been there. To be fair, Steed has featured in a lot of his dreams lately, and Ed had been leaning in ever closer. But then something had changed, and the closer he tried to get toward Steed, as if maybe he could touch him, as if maybe he could kiss him, the further Steed seemed to be. They were leaning towards each other, but the cavern of space between them kept growing wider, and then so wide that eventually he was too far to even see, just a dot on the horizon. And now? Well, now Ed's awake and sweaty and feeling all messed up. He reaches for his phone, flicks through his emails and deletes them. Spam, spam, predatory publishing house, spam. And then there's one there, from his agent. He knows what it is as soon as he sees the subject line. Forward, book signing, the Midnight Cafe. Ed, maybe you'll like this one. Jay. And there it is, laid out in all of Steed's carefully constructed words, far more formal than any of the texts the two of them have shared, just as he'd known it would be when Steed first brought it up. Dear Mr. Teach, I am writing to you in the hopes you would be interested in partnering with myself and my local establishment, the Midnight Cafe, to present your works in the first of a series of book events I'm calling Queering the Shelves. Ed doesn't have to read any more than that. End of chapter 3. The Midnight Cafe, Chapter 4. Love Triangle. This chapter begins with an excerpt from the book Ed is writing. The sunlight streams in through the stained glass windows, shining dazzling colors across Alex's face. They complement his smile, the way it's always so bright when he steps through that door. David wishes he had the ability to match that smile, to glow from within, but all he can manage is a gentle smolder. Does it show on his face? Does Alex know how much David yearns for him? I want to regret that's true. Future Ed's problems are quickly becoming current Ed's problems. He's got a signed contract to appear at the first of, hopefully many, Queering the Shelves events, a novel outline and a handful of deeply romantic scenes that fell off the ends of his fingers so fast they equal parts excite him and terrify him. He's far too aware that he's projecting his own longing for Steed onto the page, but it feels rich and full of depth and complexities, like some kind of fancy French wine. And he can't seem to stop himself from doing it. He's got a handful of chapters, almost double that in word count of assorted scenes, and it feels like there might even be the proper shape of it, slowly filling out, bit by bit. What Ed doesn't have is a way to break it to Steed that he's E. Teach. That he's the one going to be sitting up on the wingback armchair reading from The Art of Fuckery in a few short weeks, if all Steed's plans work out. On more than one occasion, he's nearly just said it, just let the words fall out of his mouth as they sit across from each other at the cafe. One time, even, Steed had offered to walk him home, and that had gone about exactly as Ed expected. He'd been far too aware of the closeness of their hands as they'd walked, not quite touching, but incredibly close. And when they'd reached Ed's place, he'd gone to say it. It had been right on the tip of his tongue, and he'd leaned in. But then, Steed was leaning in too, and maybe he'd thought Ed was going in for a kiss? So, Ed had panicked. And Steed had turned away with a horrifically light and unburdened, "Nighty night, Ed," and the moment was gone. So he's still here, getting ready for another nocturnal session of writing out prose and dialogue that feels just a touch too close to his actual life. Another day of accidentally keeping a secret from the guy that's quickly becoming his best friend. Maybe more than best friend? Fuck. Ed's brushing his teeth when the text comes through. Would you like to have a midnight snack with me tonight? That's a bit oddly formal for Steed, much more reminiscent of the email to Teach than any of the texts he usually sends. Steed's usually so casual with him, bantering back and forth, and Ed has no idea how to interpret it. How's it different from our usual snacks at midnight? He types the words before he has a chance to overthink them. Maybe some part of his brainstem will be able to figure out what's going on and navigate his way through this conversation. Maybe it'll even figure out how to tell Steed who he is while it's at it, if he just continues to look at the problem sideways like it's a startled cat. My shout? He distinctly remembers Steed paying for Ed's drinks and his nearly nightly pieces of cheesecake on more than one occasion, or calling out to Jim to put that second pot of tea on his tab. But maybe he's thinking about this all wrong. Maybe Steed's actually flirting with him? No, that would be fucking absurd, wouldn't it? They've been hanging out together for weeks now. And Ed knows he hasn't been subtle about his interest in Steed. He hangs off his every fucking word, can't stop himself staring half the time. He's paid close enough attention to Steed that he could even tell the other day when he was wearing odd socks, especially with the way he kept fidgeting about it. And in all that time, Steed hasn't shown any interest back at him. They're just friends. So Ed probably shouldn't even entertain the thought, but the more he stares at Steed's message, the more it feels like a shift, a change, A formal invitation would be very up Steed's romantically inclined alley. If he'd suddenly found himself attracted to Ed, if he wanted to make a move, surely he'd make a big deal out of something like this. Anything he could consider a proper date. Maybe Ed should just ask him, "Hey mate, is this a date?" But no, fuck that. That would be too many cards on the table, the kind that, once played, can't be taken back. No, he can play it by ear, see where the night takes them. If things feel romantic, once they're sitting across from each other, Ed can make a move then. Maybe he can even find the perfect entry point to tell him about the whole published writer e-teach thing. He crams his laptop and notebook into his bag and texts back, trying not to overthink it. Brainstem, do your worst. Meet you there, X. Well, the electronic kiss might have been a bit much, but he's already pressed send. Oh, okay, so maybe this is a date. Steed meets him at the front door to the Midnight Cafe, and he's dressed to what anyone else would call the fucking nines, but on Steed is more like very well put together. He's wearing a beautiful embroidered waistcoat, a waistcoat for a cafe, and carefully tailored pants, and he's got beautiful gold cufflinks in the shape of little lighthouses in his sleeves. Because apparently people still wear cufflinks? Ed doesn't think he even owns a pair of cufflinks. Steed holds the door open for him like he's welcoming him into his own home. Ed tries very hard not to think about what it might be like if Steed actually did invite him into his own home. But the man is all welcoming smiles and leading him to the low, two-seater sofa at the back rather than their usual work table. Which means Ed very much has to sit down, thigh to thigh with Steed, aware of the presence of his body and the way their bums want to slide closer together on the squishy couch. "Maybe Roach should get this one reupholstered," he jokes, but Steed only pats him gently on the knee. "I think it's rather cozy." Okay, so this is definitely a date, right? Even as Steed reaches for his freshly supplied cup of coffee, Ed can feel the lingering sparks of fireworks up his knee and a ringing hum in his ears that says, touch me again. Steed doesn't. At least, not yet. No, he's spelling out the pros and cons of today's cake options compared to the new caramel slice that Roach has on offer, and it becomes clear very quickly to Ed that he intends for them to share. Definitely date territory, that. So he inputs his opinion, which revolves largely around the sweeter the better, and lets Steed choose the one that picks his fancy. Ed's not even clear what he goes with in the end, with how caught up he is in the rhythmic glance of Steed's hands as he talks. "It's just been a lovely week, Ed," he's saying, suggesting there was more before that Ed should have been paying attention to, but oh well, guess he just has to play catch-up now. "I can't believe it's all coming together so neatly." That suggests the event planning, so Ed offers up. "You're a real professional at this. You know that, right?" Steed scoffs. "Hardly." "Nah, mate, you've got a real knack." And he's not even lying. Steed has been balancing all the different organizational elements with grace and gusto. Even his agent was impressed. Often, bookstores and libraries thought they knew what they were doing. But without anyone with clear expertise on board, the events had a tendency to come together fast, rushed, and with a lot of desperately crossed fingers that there would be no incidents. Steed has a contingency plan ready to go for every eventuality. "It was something I'd wished to pursue once," he says softly, like he's embarrassed. "When I was much younger, of course."
You're hardly out to pasture, steed.
Hmm.
He rolls the sound around in his mouth as he contemplates the idea. Surely you need a degree or something, some kind of professional training? Don't know what some course is going to teach you that you don't already know, Ed laughs. When it goes off perfectly, and it will, you should leverage this for more events here, but also with other places, pubs or bookstores or... He trails off, aware all of a sudden that he'd thrown his entire backing behind Steed's venture. And Steed still doesn't know the biggest hitch in his whole plan. He should just tell him, here, right now, while they're pressed hip to hip and shoulder to shoulder, and he could probably convince him to stay seated while he got the whole story out. He just has to say it. God damn it, Ed. Steed, I have to... There's a clatter at the table as Jim lays down their dessert, buttery and flaky, with all kinds of layers of pastry and cream and custard. Two delicate sporks laid out on either side of the plate. A decorative napkin, even. It's beautiful. A fucking piece of art on a plate, and Steed's leaning forward to drag it closer and nudging Ed in with a press to his arm. And how's Ed supposed to finish his sentence now? So, he doesn't. He picks up a spork and shares the dessert with Steed, both of them making wordless noises about how delicious it is, for no one to witness but each other. Ed watches as cream lands on Steed's lip and he licks it away, that darting movement of his tongue hypnotizing. And then he's reaching out with one thumb to brush a crumb of pastry out of Ed's beard. And that's hypnotizing too. This has to be a date. Surely it has to be. Steed can't be looking at him like that, all soft eyes and the promise of heat, and it not mean anything. Ed's been writing so much romance that it's probably gone to his head a little bit, but he's not delusional. He can't be imagining this. He has to fucking tell him. Steed, I...
Tell me, how's your writing going?
Well, okay. Oh, you know, he tries. It's going. Have you figured out the pacing for that tricky middle section yet? Steed takes a sip of his coffee, lets his gaze linger on Ed's face, a look far too deep and knowing for Ed's comfort. It tears him open, just a little bit, lets his vulnerable insides spill out. Nah, but I thought I might as well just bully my way through it. Gotta get all the bits on paper to figure out what needs to go later, right? The only way out is through, Steed says thoughtfully, and exactly, the only way out is through. That's actually... I mean, Alex and David are such interesting characters already, just from what you've described to me, Steed's saying. And goddamn, if he could just shut his sweet mouth for one fucking second, Ed could get it all out. But how fucking rude would Ed be if he shut down a compliment just to say his piece? That would be icing on the cake of an already probably shit sandwich. Mixed metaphors there, but there's some kind of point to it. They really have a life and depth to them, he's saying. And I'm sure that they'll surprise you. They'll have some conversation you didn't think of in your plan, but will absolutely make the whole narrative work in the end. Okay, Ed hears what he's saying, the logical, helpful bits of advice and support, but also his ears are ringing, with the blood pumping harder through them, and he has no idea how to bring the topic up properly, how to get from characters to... Oh, that's an idea. I guess, Ed agrees, laying out the path very carefully in the hopes that Steed will follow. I mean, they tend to do that. Just look at Lewis and Oliver. Yes, Steed's grinning, knocking his elbow gentle into Ed like it's some shared, perfect joke. Those simple little bits of dialogue through the middle of fuckery are just like that, aren't they? Little moments that could seem inconsequential. Except in the long run, they end up tying everything together. I imagine that's exactly what will happen for you with this novel, Ed. Oh. For a moment, Ed had thought Steed had got it. That he'd followed that train of thought all the way to the station. From the art of fuckery, to teach, to Ed. But that was obviously wishful fucking thinking. Because now Steed's grinning at him, all lovely and delighted, and saying, "Gosh, Ed, I really do love E-Teach." Fuck. I mean, he's really just a master, isn't he? I know technically you're not writing in the same genre, but Teach almost surpasses genre entirely. Steed takes another bite of the pastry and grins. It's so fascinating, the way he builds his plots, so carefully constructed and tied down into those small moments that end up meaning so much. Ed wishes he could be basking in the compliments, reminding himself that his writing is good and someone does love it, especially that specific someone that is Steed sitting right next to him, so close they're practically hugging. But it all feels hollowed out. "I think I might be obsessed with him, Ed," he laughs. "I can't stop thinking about him." And that's the crux of it, isn't it? The part of this whole thing that's making Ed's gut curdle and all the wind in his sails that had been this ridiculous fucking, definitely not a date, deflate. Because Steed isn't obsessed with Ed. He isn't spending every waking moment thinking about him. No, that's definitely an Ed-only experience, obsessing over his best friend. Because Steed is spending every waking moment thinking about his alter-fucking-ego, his fucking Batman. E-Teach. Steed's practically in love with him, with his complex brain and his cool turns of phrase and his clever metaphor. Ed's not even that guy anymore. He doesn't know how to be that guy. And Steed's never going to be interested in the Ed that's right here in front of him. Not like that. They're friends. Nothing more. So how can he tell him? He has to. That much is fucking obvious. But how can he tell him? Right now, while Steed's gushing over the guy? Just straight up, "Oh, yeah, maybe don't meet your heroes, because it turns out they're just your mate who's been lying to you like an asshole this whole time." Ed says nothing, because he's a fucking coward. He says nothing, and lets Steed finish talking his ear off about the art of fuckery, and how fucking good E-Teach is, and then Steed's making his excuses to step away towards the bathroom, and Ed's still sitting there, on the lumpy couch, trying to make sure his carefully neutral face stays that way. "You all right?" Ed jumps at the voice by his side, and he looks up to see Lucius sitting on the arm of the sofa. "What the fuck, mate?" "I can't tell if you look like you're at a funeral or going to cause one," he says lightly, and Ed blinks back, stunned. "What the fuck's that supposed to mean?" "It means," Lucius lowers his voice to a whisper, "that you look like a hot mess. Have you told Steed?" "Told Steed what?" "Told Steed what? What could Lucius possibly know that he thinks he should have told Steed? That he thinks he might be falling in love with him? That he wishes he was half as interested in Ed as he was interested in Teach?" "About you being his famous author crush," Lucius says. Ed feels his whole body go cold. "What?" "Oh yeah, we know about that." "We? Who else knows?" "Everyone except the man of the hour." He nods toward the bathrooms, keeping his eye trained there as if Steed could appear at any moment. "We googled E-Teach as soon as Steed started bringing him up with this whole book event plan. Weren't we surprised when we realized the guy had been here all along?" "But that was... Lucius, that was weeks ago." "Yeah, right about the time you should have fucking told him." I couldn't..." "Couldn't what, Ed? It's three bloody words." "But that's the whole problem, isn't it? It's not just three words. It's the look on Steed's face when he realizes he's been lied to. Even if, yes, it was technically by omission. It's knowing that not only has he ruined Steed's perception of Ed, his friend, the guy he spends nearly every night with, who, it turns out, is a massive fucking liar, but also that of famous author E. Teach. At least now there's one version of Ed that Steed actually likes. How can he ruin that? You've got to tell him, Ed, Lucius says, voice low but sure. And even as they watch, Steed's stepping out of the bathrooms and making his way back toward them. Before he falls even more in love with you. Wait, what? But Lucius is stepping away, giving Steed a pleased little wave as he heads back behind the counter. Steed settles into place beside Ed, hand rubbing his knee lightly. What was that all about? He asks. The words catch in Ed's throat. All the things he should be saying. All the things he can't bring himself to say. And on a loop in his mind, even more in love with you. Oh, he says, swallowing. It was nothing. We end with another excerpt from the book Ed is writing. David wonders what it would be like for Alex to look at him like that. Would it feel fizzy under his skin to be privy to that wandering gaze, roving up and down his body, the way Alex would look at strange men at bars when he thought they weren't looking? Would it be a head rush? Powerful? Would he be able to survive that look, directed at him, and not tell him he loved him? End of chapter 4. The Midnight Cafe, Chapter 5. Miscommunication. Could Alex really love him? Could it possibly be that simple? Was he able to hide it in his kind glances and friendly conversation, much better than David had ever hidden anything in his life? And what did it mean? If Jason, fuck, Ed, find a better name, was right, what did it mean for the two of them? How was David supposed to recontextualize all those moments of their friendship? And what if he was wrong? Ed stares at his laptop screen with its open Scrivener page blinking empty and white. The number of new scenes he's opened, typed a couple of hundred words into and then abandoned, is growing rapidly, spiraling around the third act conflict he can't seem to bring to life. It's not the only thing that's spiraling. Ed's fucking losing it, and even though he can see it happening, he's powerless to stop it. The date, or more precisely, the not date, was days ago now, and Ed's found himself dragging his feet every time he heads back towards the Midnight Cafe. He knows he has to tell Steed his secret, and sooner rather than later, before the hole he's dug himself becomes too much like a grave. But he's also shitting his pants about his feelings for Steed, which only seem to become more and more pressing when Lucius and Jim, and even Roach now, keep sending him sly looks. Or maybe they always have, but he was just too caught up in Steed to notice. The problem is, if he could trust Lucius, it would all be easy. If he trusts that Lucius knows what he's talking about, that Steed is falling in love with him, he could rip the band-aid off and trust that Steed would forgive. Fuck, who's he kidding? He'd be breaking Steed's heart with a lie as big as this. A necessary break, maybe, but a break all the same, and something he can't bring himself to do. He's been an asshole, and he's never going to live it down. But if Lucius is wrong, or a filthy liar, both of which seem like reasonable options, and Ed goes with his gut assessment that Steed is far more in love with Teach, the author, than Ed, the man, then it's still no fucking easier. But at least maybe he wouldn't break his own heart in the process. Not any more than it's already been stomped on, anyway. He wouldn't be getting his own hopes up, at least. Fuck. He feels pathetic. Pathetic, sitting here in his dark apartment under the light of the warm yellow lamps. He's got instant coffee. Instant! Beside his laptop. His stack of author copies dragged out from underneath the side table. He could just text Steed. Easy peasy. No fucking dramas. Just get it out. Right? He doesn't have to mention the love thing. That's definitely the kind of thing he should just leave out. Just himself. Ed. Edward Teach. Edward Teach, New York Times best-selling author. Ed pulls out his phone, considers his words, types. A frantic backspace, then he tries again. Nope, all of this is coming out terribly. How does he even start? Sorry, mate, but I have to tell you, I've been lying to you this whole time. Or how about, remember how I said my name was Ed? Well, that's right, obviously, but also my full name is... Ed's phone buzzes in his hand, startling him from his thoughts. It's Steed. Fuck, of course it's Steed. No one else texts him, not in years. He opens it cautiously, like his messaging app is a startled prey animal. Or maybe he's the startled prey. Can I ask you something, Ed? Shit, 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 shit. He's figured it out. He's fucking figured the whole thing out, and Ed's just gone and fucked it. If he'd had the balls to message first, at least he'd have his best foot forward and not... His brainstem types out a reply. Sure, mate. Anything. I was just wondering if you'd maybe be interested in coming out to dinner with me. Ed must have been taking too long to answer, because Steed's already typing again, the little dots bouncing on Ed's screen. On a date, if that wasn't clear. I'm a bit worried maybe I was too ambiguous last time, but I didn't want to push you. Of course, when I say dinner, I mean dinner for real humans, so I guess that would make it kind of our lunch? A date? A fucking dinner date? Maybe Lucius wasn't so batshit crazy after all. Ed, I'm so sorry if I've been too forward. I didn't want to assume anything, but the crew at the cafe have all been insisting that I wasn't imagining that you might feel similarly to me, and I thought I should just shoot my shot, as it were. But, of course, if you don't feel the same, we don't have to do dinner. Or it can just be a friendly dinner. I love dinner. Oh, God. Ed hasn't replied, and here Steed is, still typing, and he's going to backtrack everything and undo the last 5 minutes of Ed's life, and he needs to fucking reply now. Dinner would be great. Not the smoothest reply, but it's something. Great. Can I just clarify quickly if you mean as a date or just as friends? I maybe kind of thought dessert the other day was a date. Does that make this our second? He doesn't even think about it before he hits send, but the words, our second, ring in his head as he waits for Steed's reply. I'd kind of like to call this a first date, so I can do it properly. We can pick a fancy restaurant. I'll wear something nice. You always look nice. But, okay, first date it is. Our first date has a nice ring to it. A nice ring to it? Jesus fuck, he is so in love with this man. Ed waits nervously outside the tapas bar, shifting his jacket from hand to hand. He's not used to being out on the streets this early, while the sun is still out, and there's a lingering warmth to the air, and he doesn't know what to do with himself. He'd picked a proper outfit, first time doing that in years, he reckons, and he hopes Steed's gonna like it. He'd got the jump on him at their last date, outing, thing, and had looked so put together while Ed just looked like everyday Ed. So he'd done his best to make up for it this time. Velvet pants, sleeveless shirt, to really show off all the best of his tattoos. He'd messed with his hair till it was sitting just right, and maybe he's starting to feel like he's done a bit much as he waits outside the bar for Steed to arrive, but too late now, it's done. Maybe just a quick ruffle of his hair, make it look a little less artfully tousled and more just tousled. Edward! Fuck, here he is, all beautifully placed curls and rings on that hand he's holding up to grab Ed's attention. He's wearing the softest-looking teal and white patterned silk shirt, and Ed desperately wants to slide his fingers over it, feel the slip of it beneath his palms. Steed. You look... Steed hesitates for a moment, but then he grins, reaching for Ed's bare arm. Breathtaking, he settles on, and Ed feels the compliment warm him from the inside. Those fingers against his arm are like a brand. Steed looks him up and down, really takes him in, and then he's pulling Ed into a hug. Oh, they're hugging. Silk and the firm strength of Steed's back beneath Ed's arms. His breath at Ed's ear, soft and warm, and when they pull apart somehow, they still linger, Ed unwilling to let go of him completely. It's a date, right? That's what they'd said. And if it's a date, Ed's allowed to touch. He slips his fingers down along the length of Steed's arm till he's got a grip around his wrist and grins. Let's go in, yeah? Yes, let's. They find their table down at the back, nestled away in a little corner that makes everything feel more intimate. There's warm lamps and plush curtains draped heavily over the walls. Even as they settle in across the small table from each other, Ed keeps his fingers gently at Steed's wrist, just touching. He can't pull away. He doesn't want to pull away. Steed's gaze flicks down and then back up, as if he's surprised, but then covers it with a soft smile and makes absolutely no move to disentangle himself from Ed's grasp. It's easy being this close with Steed. It feels natural to touch him, to not let go. They talk about nonsense, the kind of nonsense they'd talk about on any day, really. Except everything seems to hold just a little bit more weight. Or maybe that's just Ed's imagination, imbuing the evening with all kinds of meaning that's not there. Family, first drafts, favorite movies. Their conversation spins out into the kind of back and forth that feels so comfortable between them. Nothing strained or complicated. The waitstaff bring out dishes of kingfish and lamb and goat's cheese, and Ed only breaks his grip on Steed's arm to allow him to eat. He indulges himself in pressing his ankle to Steed's instead. It should feel ridiculous, he thinks, the way he can't seem to stop touching Steed. But it's like something switched with Steed's brave offer. In calling this night a date, Ed feels risky, careless, bold. He can touch without worrying about how it will be received, or if it's too much. And Steed seems to be responding to it all well, if Ed's reading him right. He's sitting forward while they eat like he's leaning into every word Ed says. He's smiling all shy and sweet like he's nervous. Fuck, Ed's never seen him nervous like this before, except when he was reading all the filthy parts of fuckery and... Oh. That whole day is making a whole lot more sense if Ed's hindsight is working properly. He'd been blushing just like he's blushing now. Had he been thinking about Ed even then? Fuck it. Ed's being bold. He can just ask, can't he? He can... Why did you agree to come tonight, Ed? Wait, what? That's not what he'd been expecting at all. He'd been gearing up for some flirty banter, ready to throw him a, "What's got you blushing like that?" But no, Steed's serious, his brow kind of furrowed like he's concerned about what Ed's gonna say in response. As if he's worried that Ed might... "Steed, I..." "Because I know I'm just an unemployed trust fund baby with too much time on his hands and an obsession for fine literature. And you're a writer, with proper dreams and ambitions that you're doing and living, and I know we get on, but I'd been so sure when I asked that you'd say no, because nobody would ever be interested in me like that, except the crew were convinced it would be all right. And here you are, and you keep touching me, and it's giving me goosebumps, and..." "Steed." "And oh, it's Steed that's bold, really, isn't it? Laying his heart on the line like that, no hesitation? Or maybe some hesitation, but not enough to stop him actually doing it. And Ed knows, better than he knows anything, really, that it's making him fall even more in love with the guy." "Yes?" When he meets Ed's gaze, it's like every ridiculous moment in every romantic movie, all heavy and laden and full of something that Ed can't quite name, but he enjoys very much. He could bask in that look for hours, if he could guarantee its ongoing existence. "I'm very into you, actually." "There. He can say it. Ed can be bold, too."
"You are?"
"Yep. Probably too much. For far too long. I was sure you'd have realized it by now. I wasn't really subtle about it." But there's nothing but surprise in Steed's face. It's light. It's wondrous. He's fucking... God, he's buoyant with it.
"Really?"
Like he has to ask once more, just to make sure. And all the words Ed really wants to say, like, "I've wanted you since I first saw you," and "push me too hard and I'll be making proclamations neither of us are ready for," clamor on his tongue.
"Yeah," he settles for instead.
"Yeah, mate."
"Oh, well."
Steed reaches across the table then, grabs Ed's hand in both of his, and pulls it, without even a breath of hesitation, to his lips. When he kisses Ed's knuckles, it's like the softest brush of rose petals, and Ed feels it in his toes. He locks the sensation into his mind, securing it for his next writing session. The feel of his pulse beneath Steed's fingers, the way his breath is coming just that little bit tighter. He's grinning. He knows it, big and broad, but he can't seem to help himself. Steed fucking likes him. Properly likes him, and Ed wants him so badly he could cry or maybe write a sonnet. A sonnet for Bonnet. Fuck, he's going mental.
"Did we want dessert?" he manages to ask. "Or do we just want to get out of here?"
They loiter out the front of the restaurant, the sun now set and the streetlights warming the path. It feels like an evening filled with possibility, like the day has barely begun. And Ed supposes, for the way they've both been living their lives lately, it's kind of true. He reaches for Steed's hand. Not a careful touch of the wrist this time, but properly. Fingers threaded together as he pulls him in closer. Hook, line, and sinker. "Steed," he says, and it comes out soft, almost a whisper.
"Ed." No questions between them. Not really, but there's something lingering in the air, some crackle and spark of energy, and maybe that's the question, unspoken. Where will it lead? Where will it go? Is Ed brave enough, bold enough, to follow this path? Can he just have what he wants? Reach for it? His free hand finds the line of Steed's jaw, stubble peppering his fingertips.
"You," he tries to say, and he's not sure where it's all leading, but that deeper part of him, the part the words flow out of when he's convinced he has none left, takes the reins. "You make me so happy." There's a beat, a breath. In the end, Ed's not sure if he's the one pulling Steed in,
or if Steed's bridging the gap, surging forward to meet him. But the outcome, after all, is the same. Their lips press together, warm and soft, and with a gasp of breath. And then Ed's burying his fingers into Steed's hair and deepening the kiss. It's so much. It's too much, maybe, except he couldn't pull away now if he wanted to, and he steadfastly, assuredly, does not want to. He drinks Steed in, feasts on that desperate little wine that Steed makes, and fuck, he's wanted him for so long. Friends? Fuck friends. This is so much better. And then they're pulling away from each other, breathing heavily, and Steed's hands are on Ed's waist, not letting go, and Ed's still holding him with that thumb on his chin. And maybe they could just take a photo of this moment and keep it forever. Steed grins shyly, rocks his weight forward towards Ed slightly, and then back again. Well, that was... Ed doesn't hesitate, just dips in for another. A quick kiss this time. Playful. Never imagined I'd get to kiss you, he murmurs against Steed's mouth. This is unreal. Writing a romance? Steed laughs. And living one at the same time? Ed imagines Alex and David confessing their feelings for each other under starlight and lamplight, with weeks and months of buried tension finally rising to the surface. He thinks about that book, printed in his hands, handing it over to Steed like some love letter to their own romance. And maybe they're not there yet, but he wants to be so desperately. The story of them, The Midnight Cafe by E. Teach. Oh, fuck. Oh, fuck, fuck, fuck. Ed pulls back, carefully schools his face. It had gotten away from him, hadn't it? He didn't mean to forget all about the fucking elephant in the room, all the secrets he hadn't shared. It had been so easy, really, to be caught up in the idea of Steed wanting him, and Steed right in front of him, and Steed kissing him. He has to tell him. I, he stammers out, pulling on his jacket against the chill now seeping into his skin. I have to go. No, he thinks, just tell him. Oh, I thought we could maybe go back to the cafe, or my place? I have to work on the book. Where the fuck is this coming from? Get it together, Ed. Deadlines, you know, and... Ed, thank you for the lovely date, he says, and he means it, but with his brainstem in control, he's not saying all the things he should be saying, and it feels like his mouth's got a mind of its fucking own. I had a really good time. I'll try and make it to the cafe tomorrow. I'll text you. I'll tell you everything. I'll let you down. I'll break your heart. God, he's a fucking idiot. He turns, and he runs, and Steed's calling after him, he's sure. But there's no hand on his arm to hold him back. There's no footsteps on the pavement chasing after him. He runs, and Steed lets him go. End of chapter.
This chapter contains a piece of art by Dean Bird, located within the chapter just before their date.
We have an image of Ed and Steed in their date outfits. They stand side by side on the sidewalk, holding hands and looking at one another. The sun sets behind them, turning the sky pink. The Midnight Cafe, Chapter 6, Forced Proximity.
from Ed. Can you pretend to be me just for one night? A text from Izzy. What the fuck, Ed? Don't hear from you for years and then be me? Ed. I'm serious. Can you? Izzy. Ed or teach? Ed. Does it matter? Teach. Izzy. Fuck off. No. Ed. Why not? Izzy. 'Cause you've got headshots with your own fucking face on them, you twat. Never mind. Fuck him. It was a stupid idea anyway. He'd spent the past week since the beautiful, blissful, disastrous dinner chasing down every avenue he could think of to make this damn book event go smoothly, to no avail. He was all out of options. All Ed had left was an impending sense of doom, too many words left unsaid, and a whole lot of nausea. Why couldn't he just tell him? It should be so fucking easy. Hi, Steed. Yeah, it's me. Sorry I've been ignoring you. Only, I've somehow avoided telling you about one of the biggest parts of me. And now, you're going to hate me. And I can't bear to see it. Now, the day is upon him. He's nearly thrown up twice, but he'd managed to dress all in black, the way he'd always done on his author press tours. It feels like a mask, a brand, something entirely different to how Steed sees him. Just another wall put up between the Ed he wants to be and the teach he'll be tonight. This is who I am, Steed. Do you see me now? Steed's been leaving him messages on his phone, but he hasn't been able to look at them, let alone reply. He'd received a final confirmation from his manager for the evening, and he'd replied with a single thumbs-up emoji. Things were going great. Obviously, things were not going great. He'd found the back door of the cafe, offloaded his author copies to Jim with a sad smile, and settled in to chain smoke. It had been ages since he'd done this, fucking torn through a pack of cigarettes with abandon. But if there was any time to fall back on bad habits, apparently, it was this one. He can hear the hustle and bustle of the crowd inside. All of them come to see him. Of course they had. He was a New York Times bestseller, with a big reputation and big advances. And maybe if he played his cards right, one of his books would be made into a movie sometime soon. People were interested in hearing what he had to say. The problem was, Ed didn't think he had a single thing to say. So he has a copy of Fuckery tucked into his back pocket, and he'll do a reading. Nothing can go wrong with a reading. He can keep his head down, avoid Steed's gaze, try not to cry, and read. Or, better yet, pick one of the heartbreaking passages so, when he ends up having a full-on breakdown, he can pretend it's just because the words are so meaningful. Genius. Master plan. Nothing to go wrong here. Ed? Ed startles, almost dropping his cigarette, but it's just Lucius, closing the heavy back door quietly behind him. What? It comes out gruffer than he'd intended, but the kid doesn't seem to mind. Didn't know you smoked. Fuck off. There's a lot of things you don't know about me. Lucius raises an eyebrow, full of condescension, and Ed winces. All right, some things. He holds out the packet of cigarettes for Lucius to take one, lights it for him like an apology. He lets them both warm their lungs before letting out a long exhale of smoke. I think I've really fucked up. Yeah, I mean, that was obvious weeks ago. Lucius cocks his hip, looks them up and down. Seems like you've had plenty of opportunities to fix it, and here you are. Here I am. You ran off on him.
Ed sighs, tipping his head back so it rests against the cool brick wall. Yeah, well. You're a coward. Got that one figured out on my own. Thanks, mate. Lucius takes another slow drag, and Ed can feel the judgment oozing off him. But there's something else there, too. Something it feels like, maybe hope? You know, he really likes you. I think you really like him, too. And that's the problem, isn't it? He'd spent so long procrastinating Steed's disdain that it festered into something darker, far more heinous. If he'd just been honest with Steed from the get-go, they could have avoided all this crap. But he'd fucked it up. He'd been more nervous around a guy than he'd been since he was a kid, and put his bloody foot in it. And now he was up to his waist in quicksand with no way out. He was an idiot, and an asshole, and... All right, numbnut, what do I do? Lucius taps the ash off his cigarette. Well, Steed's in there having a full-on breakdown because his boyfriend won't answer his bloody texts. And you're out here having a full breakdown because you're his boyfriend, but you're also his hero. And yeah, I guess that would be a bit of a mindfuck, but I think maybe you might just have to get on with it. Get on with it. Right. He can do that. Just waltz on in there, put his teach bravado on, and sell this damn thing. And tell him. Tell him. Right. You've already fucked it up, Lucius continues as he finishes the smoke, butting it out with the toe of his boot. I think the only way out is through. The only way out is through. Ed drops his own butt to the concrete, stomps on it roughly. The only way out is through. He pushes his way through the throng of bodies, stopping regularly to introduce himself and shake hands. Some people recognize him, grabbing their friends' arms to get their attention as he passes by. He signs some books. He shakes some hands. His only thoughts are for the man at the front of the room. Steed's standing by the podium, eyes scanning the function space. Fuck, he even looks good now, all navy blue suit and patterned cravat. He's worried, that much is obvious. But he's also doing a great job of hiding it, managing the room in a way that Ed's never been able to master in his life. He's a natural at this, just as Ed had known he would be. He's wrangling customers, getting bums on seats, making sure everyone is fed and has a drink in hand. The wingback is set up on an artfully arranged stack of pallets, just like they'd talked about over one of their many shared desserts. And it's perfect. He knows his time is up. The bill has come due when he sees Steed searching for him. He's scanning the crowd, checking faces, and then... When they catch eyes, Ed knows. His face brightens for a moment, like he's pleased to see him. But Ed's got his book in hand, his hair down, and he's just signed someone's copy of fuckery. Steed's not an idiot. He knows what someone working the room looks like. Ed barely catches the way his face breaks. It's there and gone again, so fucking fast that if he didn't know better, he could pretend he'd imagined it. But it was there, it was real, and it settles like lead in his gut. Ed reaches the podium. He's feet away from Steed now, and then the man is reaching for the microphone, speaking calmly but clearly. And Ed wishes the floor could swallow him up, or turn him into a volcano so he could belly flop to his death, or anything but this. Welcome, everyone, to the incredibly talented, one-of-a-kind... There should have been flourishes. He knows exactly how Steed would have done the flourishes, but his voice now is almost flat. Edward Teach. Ed steps up onto the stage and takes the seat that was always meant for him, even if he didn't really want it. He turns away from Steed's gaze, out into the sea of faces that make up the crowd. Hi, everybody, he says. I'm Ed. The reading goes fine. It goes. He says the words, and he even manages to get a little bit of decent storytelling going, with all the intonations and careful pacing that keep the crowd on the edge of their seats. He doesn't cry, but to be fair, he also manages to avoid looking in Steed's direction once, so it was probably a near thing. Maybe Steed had even walked out entirely after the stunt Ed pulled. He wouldn't blame him. He would leave him to the wolves, too, if the roles were reversed. Fuck Ed and his inability to be open and honest. Fuck Ed and his fear of being known. The crowd are cheering as he wraps up, as he finds his way down from the podium. Someone shoves a glass of champagne in his hand, and he downs it viciously. It was probably good champagne, too. Steed wouldn't have settled for cheap crap. Another handshake, another signature, another thanks so much for coming. Do you like the canapes? Isn't the decor here fucking mint? The room circles tighter and tighter, like the center of a tornado, and Ed pushes his way frantically toward the kitchens, where there's a little bit more air to breathe. A little bit more air and, unfortunately, Steed. Steed. The word falls out of his mouth in surprise. The two of them suddenly standing far closer to each other than he'd ever intended. But Steed's shying away, making himself smaller. And fuck, that hurts too. Edward? I... No, you don't have to explain. I think I've got it all. Thanks. Steed. Behind them, Pete pushes past with a tray full of lattes balanced precariously as he hands them out to guests, and someone else is chattering away about the sanctity of coffee stains on books, and it all seems so stupidly mundane when Steed's in front of him with that tight look on his face, like he might cry if given the chance. He dashes at his eyes with the palms of his hands, huffs in a tight breath. Was that it then? Ed holds his breath. He can't speak now, even if he wanted to. Just hide all this from me? Let me make a fool out of myself? Was it funny to think that I was stupid enough not to realize who you were? No. And you let me flirt with you, kiss you even. I... Steed takes in another heavy, shuddering breath. And, okay, maybe he actually is crying now. Ed wants to reach across the space between them, haul him in and hold him tight, but it's clear Steed wants nothing to do with him, so he keeps his hands firmly by his sides and digs his nails into his palms. I was all in, he says instead, voice low and soft. Steed, I was all in. I've sat here all night, Steed goes on, pretending my heart wasn't breaking. I could manage, I think, if it turned out E. Teach was some asshole. I'd hoped he wouldn't be, that the heart and soul that made it onto the page reflected something real and true in the man. But I'd been prepared to be disappointed anyway. Don't meet your heroes, they always say. Don't meet your heroes, Steed. They're always going to fuck you over. What hurts most, he says, and it's practically a sob, is learning the man I really thought I might love was the asshole all along. Ed can feel his own heart splintering into a million pieces. All the bits of him that had been so sure Steed liked the author more than the man. All the bits of him that had been convinced Steed couldn't possibly like him the way he liked Steed. All those bits collapse into rubble, into shards that stab and poke at the inside of his skin as Steed stares at him. The man I really thought I might love. Well, Steed says, roughly, do you have anything to say for yourself? But, like always, Ed is a coward. He's always been good with words, when they're written down on paper. He's proven himself terrible with them when he has to find the words to speak, to say, to make himself known. He's always been at a loss for words with Steed. I'm sorry would be a good start, but it sits stale and not enough on the end of his tongue. That's the problem, isn't it? Nothing ever seems like it could be enough. And so he says nothing, and Steed watches him say nothing, and then he's pushing past Ed, back into the crowd towards the front of the cafe, where Lucius and Jim are busy selling copies of his books, and Roach is hustling around with trays of petit fours. He'd known when Steed started planning this event he'd be capable of handling anything. Any disaster. And this, it turns out, is no exception. Ed's the one incapable of handling disaster. So he puts his author face back on, scrubs the tears out of his mustache, and finds some more fucking hands to shake, pretending his own aren't trembling the whole time. End of chapter. The Midnight Cafe, Chapter 7. Second Chances. David watches the sunset outside his window, like all his hopes and dreams and... no. The sun sets on David's final day of happiness, but... no. His heart is hollowed out, scooped with a melon spoon, and... no. Ed had thought his old writing was nihilistic and steeped in sadness, but the sentences he puts to page in the days following the book signing have nothing on that. He's meant to be writing his way out of the third act conflict, but every time he tries, the characters just end up dancing around each other, or hurting each other again and again. His own fictional self-flagellation. His apartment's a mess now that he's spending more time in it. Musty from keeping the curtains closed all hours. His wardrobe has firmly become a floor-drobe, and there's a stack of dirty dishes and takeaway containers on the sink, but at least he's eating. At least he's showered lately, even if the water was up as hot as it would go until he was burning with it. There's ignored emails from his agent on his laptop. His budgeting spreadsheet is minimized out of sheer embarrassment. He's a mess. A fucking mess. But he's writing, he thinks. Even if it's all going poorly, he's still writing. It's something. During sunlight hours, he sleeps, like a fucking vampire. He writes at night, hunched over his screen like he's 20 years younger and pretending it won't ruin his lower back. And somehow, every night, he finds himself staring at his phone as the clock ticks over to midnight. At first, he's not sure what he's waiting for. It haunts him, the clock ticking closer, like it's holding secrets he can't untangle. And then, as he watches the flip of the numbers, it becomes clearer. He's waiting for Steed, or waiting for his own courage, for something to change and pull him from this goddamn funk. At each midnight, things feel liminal, like he could be anyone. And he opens his messages to type out the best apology anyone's ever seen. The cursor sits, blinking, and endless moments later he closes the app again and turns back to the tragedy that is David and Alex's romance, just to write out another heartbreaking chapter that will end up in the trash folder. Day by day, another one, just like that. Shower, takeout, an undrafted midnight apology. And again, and again. A small part of Ed asks himself how many days he can go on like this. But it's a hypothetical, isn't it? It's not the kind of question he really has an answer to. And so he wallows, and he writes out all his hurts and sadness, and projects them onto his characters like the writer he is, and wallows some more. Rinse and repeat. Is it possible to be forgiven? No. Is it possible to seek forgiveness? No. Can a broken heart be repaired, or would the effort only crumble it further? No. Ed watches the digits on his phone click once again, close to midnight. I never thought you were stupid. Delete. I didn't mean to lie to you, it's just... Delete. Look, I write about messy queer love, and I'm very good at it, that apparently I don't know how to trust my own feelings, and don't know how to get over myself, and... Delete, delete, delete. Maybe if he just called Steed, would that work? Would he be able to find the words under pressure? Historically, he hasn't been very successful on that front. But there's no misdirect left anymore, is there? No conversation change for Steed to swing at him for his coward brain to hide behind. Maybe he wouldn't even pick up and he could just leave a message on his answering machine. Easy fucking peasy. No problems. He could just... There's a knock at his door. A little hesitant at first, but then more solid. Ed? Ed drops his phone, wincing as it smacks against the carpet. Oh, fuck. Ed? He can't quite believe it's real. Some stupid, cliche part of him had been convinced he was never going to hear Steed's voice again, let alone out the front of his apartment. He picks up his phone and stumbles to the door. Ed, I... Steed trails off as he pulls it open, flinging open the barrier between them. No, it's not quite that easy. There's still a threshold. Still days of silence and that voice in Ed's ear telling him there's no way Steed's here for anything good. He's holding an envelope of cash, clumsily sealed, and he thrusts it out across the space between them. This is yours, he says. There's something tight in the tone of his voice, some layer Ed's never heard before, and it cuts a little as he looks between Steed's face and the money. What is it? He asks, as if there aren't better, more important things he should be saying. The cash takings from the event. It seemed stupid to deposit them just to transfer them to you. He shakes the envelope awkwardly, waiting for Ed to just take it. But Ed just stands there dumbly. Steed continues filling the silence, unable to quite meet Ed's eye. I'm quite miffed, actually, because I was very confident Lucius would be able to bring this to you. But instead, he's fucked off on a romantic weekend getaway, leaving me here with this for you. Oh, so he hadn't even wanted to come. Well, Ed grabs the envelope, stuffs it in the pocket of his track pants to sort out later. Thanks, he says. I guess. Edward. Steed. Steed waits, pointedly, feet still maddeningly right along the threshold. If Ed gave up, tried to close the door between them, he'd probably smack Steed on the nose. But if Steed doesn't even want to be here, why is he making this so fucking difficult? What is it? He asks, finally. I was kind of hoping for an apology, actually, Steed says. Though it feels a bit shitty if I have to ask for one. Right, fuck, an apology. He had been working on one just 5 minutes ago. It wasn't that fucking hard, Ed. Get it together. Steed, I... He cuts himself off, tipping his head back in frustration. He has no idea what to say, how to fix all the tangled little snarls of things he's let fester. Every combination of words he considers feel like entirely not enough. Too little, too late. He considers for a moment pulling out his laptop and hunting through his trash folder to find something he can share with Steed, something that would explain everything. But he's not David, and Steed isn't Alex, and that's not how real life works. It's all right, really, Steed's saying, as if Ed's uncommitted silence means something. I'm quite pleased with how the whole event turned out, despite it all. Roach was very impressed. The takings were good. We might actually be able to make them a more regular occurrence if we can get some other authors on board. Ed knows he's not included in that we, and it stings a little, but there's also something proud there beneath it all. He'd known Steed would do amazing things if given the chance to shine. The event was always going to go well, and Roach was always going to see his value. There had never been any other option. "You're meant for that kind of work, Steed," he says. It's not an apology, far from it, but Steed blushes despite himself. A little spark of light before he schools his face into something more stoic. "Ah, well, there were a lot of circumstances that fell into place to make it..." "I'm serious, Steed. I wasn't lying when I said you had a knack for it." "No, just about other things, I guess." "I wasn't..." Ed grips the doorframe with his fingers, as if the pressure of the wood against his skin could ground him in the moment. What he wants, really, is to reach for Steed, but he knows so clearly it would be unwelcome. "I wasn't lying," he manages to say, squeezing his eyes shut. "Right. I was just avoiding things, obviously. Missed opportunities I should have taken to tell you everything, but... And that's the crux of it, isn't it, really? So obvious now in hindsight. It was really nice not to be Ed Teach for a while there. I could be anyone at the Midnight Cafe." When he opens his eyes, Steed's watching him, face resolute. There's no tells there, nothing to give Ed insight into what he's thinking, even as he looks for the bits that might make him feel hope. But now that he's started, it feels like a landslide, all the words building up inside his throat. Finally, finally, he has the words, even if he has no self-control. "Before the cafe, before you, I didn't even know what I was supposed to write next. It was all crap and cliché. I was half convinced I needed to pack it in, go get a real job. Ed. And then you'd asked me about myself, about my writing, and it felt easy." His breath hitches in his throat, a soundless sob. "And I kept digging myself a fucking hole, not telling you, because it was so simple to chase that high, to chase that ease and friendship, and the closer we became, the harder it was to tell you. And that's not the half of it, is it? There's the other things, the important things. And you liked Teach so much, your favorite author, with all his perfect turns of phrase and heavy emotional beats, and I'm not that guy, Steed. I'm not a good writer. I'm hardly a good person. Except Ed." Steed trails off, and Ed catches his gaze again, like it's calling to him. And oh, maybe there is a tell. That brief flicker of a moment where the tension between them feels soft again, even if still fragile. "You are him." "Wait, what?" "No, no, I left that part of me behind a long time ago. I'm not..." "I've heard you spin out plots. I've seen you build characters. I always thought you were a bit of a genius, actually. But Teach is..." "Teach isn't the one I asked out, was he?" That stills Ed in his tracks, has his breath catching in his chest. Because he's right, isn't he? Steed had been beautiful and vulnerable and bold, and he had asked Ed out to dinner, had kissed Ed, not Teach. "You might be a genius, but you can also be thick." I just wish you wanted me as much as I wanted you. Maybe then it wouldn't have been so complicated. Maybe then you could have just told me." No, Steed's face is tight and drawn again, like he's ready to step away, to give up. But Ed can't have that, not when he's right here, so close. Not when all the little pieces of their story are slipping into place, all the half-truths spoken out loud for fucking once. "Steed, I..." But there's no words for this, is there? Not really. No, there's only action. So Ed reaches for Steed's hand, grips it tight between both of his. Fuck, Steed, I love you. And maybe in some other version of events, Steed might have hardened then, pulled his hand away and left for real, become some distant memory of Ed's, of some precious moment in his life where he had a place and a person and a life he loved. He'd never go back to the cafe, of course, but he'd remember it fondly, if sadly. He'd edit his book, make it the trauma porn everyone wanted to see anyway, and maybe Steed would read it, even, and see himself in the pages. Life would keep turning. But it's not that version of events. In this version of events, Steed's leaning in. He's shaking his head, mouth turned into a not-quite frown, and is he laughing? Really? Fuck, Ed, he says, and he's stepping forward, right into Ed's space, across the threshold of his apartment door, and reaching for him properly. His hands are on Ed's face, hauling him in, and when Steed kisses him, it's like the sweetest caramel, soft and decadent. His own hands find Steed's waist, his back, anywhere he can grip tighter, hold him closer. He's never felt this desperate before, but Steed's meeting him kiss for kiss, not letting him go, and it becomes easier, slowly, to trust that when they eventually break apart, it won't be the end. But when it does happen, Ed has something incredibly important to say. Fuck, I'm sorry. Their foreheads press together. He's gasping for breath. I'm so sorry. But Steed's only laughing again, pushing Ed back into his apartment and shutting the door behind them with a kick of his foot. End of chapter. The Midnight Cafe, Chapter 8. Only One Bed. Ed wakes to Steed's arm lazily draped over his waist, his breath warm and ticklish against his shoulder. He's real, he's there. He can feel the hairs on Steed's arm. Can take the moment to tangle their fingers together easily. He was there, and he'd stayed, even as they'd kissed, and Ed had cried, and maybe Steed had also done some crying too. God, it had been a pathetic night, as the clock turned into the wee hours. Ed had felt so drained. It had been good, perfect, actually, for Steed to judge him on the state of his apartment. Wait, and watch while he cleaned his dishes and changed his sheets and piled his clothes into the basket at the foot of his bed. It had felt good, too, when Steed had stayed close to him, had towed him toward the bed by one hand, and slowly, gently undressed him. Falling asleep with Steed around him, as the sun rose over the city and tried to peek its way past his blackout curtains, had been exactly what they both needed, he thinks. It's certainly true now, as he yawns and relaxes back into that touch, steadfast and solid. He takes a moment to bask in it, turning his head so he can catch sight of the curves of Steed's face. There is stubble on his jaw, and he's snoring a little, but he also looks so calm and relaxed and at peace. Ed hasn't felt peace like this in what feels like weeks. Quietly, he presses a kiss to the edge of his mouth, so soft it's barely a glance, and then he slips out of bed. Steed huffs in his sleep, but he doesn't wake, and Ed's glad. When he opens his writing laptop, he goes straight for a new document. There will be nothing worthwhile found in the pages and pages of angst. He doesn't need them now. They won't serve him or the story. No, what he needs now is love. Wholehearted, unashamed. The kind of love that declares itself. And maybe David and Alex don't have all the right words. The right words can be hard. Maybe they're fumbling their way through, but loving each other even harder for the fumble. He brings the laptop back to bed, resting it on his knees as he watches Steed sleep beside him. When he types, the words come easy. And okay, the prose is probably going to need some work, and the plot will need fine-tuning. But he has time to make all those things perfect, get all the pieces right. The editor will have their own suggestions about the way they want things to go. It doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be good enough for right now. And hey, maybe good enough that Steed will read it when he sends it through to him. An email lands in his inbox with a ding, and Ed frantically mutes the laptop, but it's too late. Steed's already shuffling awake beside him, reaching out with one hand to grab Ed's thigh, as if to make sure he's there and real. Hey, Ed says softly. Morning. Or afternoon. Morn-ternoon. Afternoon. Afternoon. Love it. And Steed's grinning up at him, soft and warm. Is it too early to go for coffee? He asks. It's only 5 p.m. Steed leans back on the pillow and stretches his arms above his head. Sounds perfect. Hi, Ed. One of the house artists saw your project and wanted to do a little mock-up. Obviously not final. I'm sure the publisher will have something to say. But what do you think of these? Jay. The chapter ends with several different versions of The Midnight Cafe by Edward Teach, book cover drawn out by Dean Bird. They're lovely, and you'll want to click back to the archive to take a look at them. This has been The Midnight Cafe by Kara Wrights and Dean Bird, read by Little Fingies. Please use the link in behind this track to return to the archive and leave comments and kudos. And of course, I would love to hear about it if you enjoyed the podfic. Thank you so much for listening. On to the next.